Welcome to the third episode of Polititeen. Today is June 6th. Watch as me and Varun discuss issues from Breonna Taylor to something a little closer to home. And as always, be sure to stay tuned for updates at the end. Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Politicast. Today is June 5th. Of course, I'm joined here by Varun.
Hey guys, my name is Varun. I'm Damien's co-host on Polititeen Podcast. This is our third installment of the Polititeen Podcast. Again, it is June 5th. We've seen many, many events in our community and our nation unfold since our second podcast this Wednesday, June. So I want to begin today's podcast by, first of all, saying rest in peace to one of our victims of police brutality in the Black community, and that is Breonna Taylor. If you don't know who Breonna Taylor is, Breonna Taylor was a person who was murdered by the police a couple of years ago, and they broke into her home and they shot her. I think they carried out a bunch of rounds of gun rounds, and it's an issue. You know, we've been facing the same issue for years and years and years, and we need to address this issue in a unified platform. What do you think about the Breonna Taylor incident a couple of years ago, Damien?
I think it's a very shocking incident, you know, especially since it's one thing to be murdered on the street. It's one thing to be murdered outside of your home, but to be murdered inside of your home, the one place where I feel like everyone should feel safe, it's tragic. It's really heartbreaking.
Yeah, and honestly, I believe Breonna's name should not go unheard. You know, people are forgetting about, you know, her death, which happened only a couple of years ago in this world. And I think that it did bring some good things after the LMPD pledged to change how they carried out search warrants, and all of officers in that police department had to wear body cameras for accountability reasons. Obviously, the body camera regulation has been broken multiple times, which is why the Justice for Breonna hashtag has been reborn today to bring awareness back to the issues that we faced as a nation for years and years and years. So I just encourage all of our viewers today and our live viewers and our podcast viewers later on to not forget Breonna's name and to celebrate her birthday in the right way by promoting unity in a time of national stress. And that said, we're going to move forward today to an event that happened very close to our home. Damien and I are both from Forsyth County, Georgia, and we saw one of the most gripping and surprising events occur in our community of Cumming, Georgia. Damien, do you want to describe this for our viewers?
Yeah, first and foremost, I want to start off by thanking everyone that signed the petition to have said perpetrators expelled from Forsyth County schools. You guys are doing an amazing thing by being politically active and taking initiative. I'm happy that me and Varun both took the initiative, you know, to start up the petition. And it's insane how quickly the petition has blown up. It really shows that you guys are out there supporting it, and you guys have to give yourselves a pat on the back. With that being said, I want to address any hate coming towards the perpetrators. I think me and Varun can both agree on this. You guys should not be leaking, you know, addresses or personal information. If you really want to make a change, make it politically. And it starts with signing the petition. And then furthermore, it starts with sharing the petition and reaching out to anyone that you know can really make a change. Guys, do not threaten any perpetrators. You're not doing everyone that has signed this petition a favor. You're not doing, you know, George Floyd a favor, who the protesters that he harassed were out there representing. You're not doing the aforementioned Breonna Taylor a favor. It's, you guys need to, I know that a lot of the people signing the petition haven't done any of this, but if you see these actions, speak out against them as if it was racism itself. Harassment is not something to be played with, especially in our community. We want to deal with this the proper way. What do you have to say, Varun?
I agree completely, Damien. I think that the issues that we're facing today should not be compounded by us fighting back in the wrong ways. I think we should do the right thing in this instance and to institutionally hold the people involved in this circumstance accountable. And today, this morning, the actual events that occurred for our viewers were not from Forsyth County, Georgia. What actually happened was a group of peaceful protesters around the Forsyth County courthouse were interrupted in their protests by a bunch of high school students from our county who actually came in their cars and they played a racially insensitive song from their car. And they said something very racially insensitive from their car window to the protesters. And we saw many, many events from this state throughout the day, including a from a student from a high school in Forsyth County, Georgia, again, of him imitating the officer that killed George Floyd and the stance he was doing during that instance. And hearing, reading about this, whichever way you got this information, it is very jarring, appalling, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, Damien, I am not surprised, because our county has been a historically landmark home for racism and things like these. And honestly, I'm not surprised, seeing as how our nation is dealing with this crisis. How do you feel about that, Damien?
Yeah, well, first I want to apologize to the viewers. You're cutting out a little bit. But I have to agree with you, Bruin. I have to agree. I am a little surprised, though. In that sense, I will disagree with you. You know, I've seen in the past years, my parents moved to this 20 years ago, and I've seen it change. I've seen the county change a lot, not only in terms of industrialization, with respect to roads being built and new businesses being brought in, but also in respect to the culture in the community here in Atlanta, Georgia. You know, this incident, it's shocking because we feel like a community that stands up against this, because we're represented in so many different ways. You know, there's Hispanic people that live in Forsyth County. There's African American people that live in Forsyth County. You know, Indian people, Asian people of Asian descent, alongside those Indian people. You know, it's disappointing, but I wouldn't say that it's necessarily surprising.
Right, and that is it's a very valid point. I think if you do live in Forsyth County, please go to our petition at change.org/justiceinfoco, justice in FOCO, that is, and sign our petition. We also have steps to email and call the officials involved in Forsyth County schools to get the people involved in this instance rightfully expelled. I hope my audio is better. Let me know if it you know, jars out or spazzes out soon. But to kind of draw the focus towards something else in today's world that happened today, actually, 57 members of the Buffalo Police Riot Response Team resigned over a very, very controversial event that happened a couple days ago. Damien, do you want to mention what that event was?
So they pushed over, it was a disgusting video, if you guys haven't seen the video already, but they pushed over an elderly man, and I think he was 72, if I'm not mistaken. They pushed him over, and you can see in the video that slowly blood starts pouring out onto the concrete from a head injury that he had received. The update has been that he's in critical condition, but he's in stable condition. But it's just something tragic. I think, Varun, if you want to talk about what the police department has responded.
Right. And before that, I wanted to draw attention to the union who represents the Buffalo Police Department and the officers involved in that, their response to the entire crisis. And it's very, very surprising and jarring to hear. Two of the members who were responsible for the bleeding out of that 72-year-old white male were suspended without pay for a indefinite period of time for doing so. And what happened was the union representing the entire police department came out with a statement. And that statement said that, you know, they didn't push the man over, and the man slipped without even them doing anything. And I think that it's completely ignorant and a lie. Because if you watch that video, we reposted it on our Twitter after seeing what happened that day. He was not a person that slipped. He was obviously pushed. And the other thing that happened was they were labeling him as the kind of person who was trying to interfere with the police doing their duty. And I think that's not true, because the man, obviously in the video, was holding a helmet of one of the riot gear officers and just trying to return his helmet to him, doing his job and his civic responsibility as a citizen. And you know, that is jarring. But on to your point, Damien, 57 members, as I said, of the police department, they resigned from their posts to protect those that were arrested instead of protecting the American people, because they simply thought that it was not fair that these people were suspended without pay because they were following their duties. Thoughts about that, Damien?
Well, I think that we have to take a step back a little bit and remember what police officers are. First and foremost, I've heard it be said time and time again by police officers that are coming out and speaking on the political issues that are surfacing today. You guys have to remember that police officers, beyond anything, are first responders. And their duty as a first responder is to give aid to anyone that's injured. It was shocking to see them walk by an elderly man on the floor, would appear to be unconscious, bleeding out, and showing no remorse, just continuing to march. That is not what I believe a police officer should do. I know that as a first responder, that is unethical. And I think beyond that, it should be immoral to anyone that considers themselves someone that protects and serves their community.
I agree. And that's, it's completely valid. And I think that I saw in the video, as I watched it multiple times, I was completely jarred about what was happening. But also I saw some police officers who were looking at the man and they were like, I need to help this person. He is bleeding out, obviously hurt. But there were some other police officers who were pushing them back and saying, no, you know, call the EMT. That's not our job as per se a riot person, but it is your job as a citizen of America and as a member of the police force. What thoughts on that, Damien?
Well, you know, this whole idea, this whole concept of not being your job, if everyone takes on that idea that, hey, you know, I shouldn't act this or I shouldn't do this because that's not my job, then what have we come to as a society, as a civilization? You know, I think right. that if you're going to consider yourself someone, again, that's supposed to protect and not only uphold the Constitution, but protect and serve those in your community, that it's protecting them. And if you see that someone is bleeding out, if you see that a fellow police officer is choking an African-American to the point where they're begging for their mother and saying that they can't breathe, that it is your job, not as a police officer, but as a human, as a citizen of the United States of America, to say something. You know, Varun, a lot of people were saying that it came out that two of the police officers that were responsible for George Floyd's death, that they were rookies. And a lot of people were beginning to excuse them. But I was talking to someone earlier today and I said, I don't think that it's right to excuse them because as police officers, it's not their duty to call, you know, the officer that obviously suffocated George Floyd to death. It's as Americans, because you saw that the people that were recording him were even saying, come on, let him go. You know, you're going to kill him. He can't breathe. So why didn't the police officer say it? I don't care if you're a rookie or if you're a 12-year vet. People that don't wear the badge spoke up and said something. What are your thoughts, Brun?
I was going to say the exact same thing, Damien. I think that not even as much as people saying it on the sidelines, the person himself was saying it. You know, George Floyd was there on the ground saying he was calling for his mom, you know, for God's sake. He was saying, can I get a breath of air? Can I get some water? Mom, I need some help. You know, he was crying for help and he was obviously in mortal danger. And the officer involved heard that. He obviously heard his cries. He wasn't deaf. And so I think it's down to his moral roots. And not only him being a police officer, but more so, him being inherently racist and having that systemic racism within him, because I think half the issue is police officers being brutal, right? But the other half of the issue is actually systemic racism in our nation.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna disagree with you in respect to him just being blatantly racist. It is clear that he is racist. It is clear that what he was doing is racist. But I feel like this has exceeded the problem of racism, and I think the issue that we see, because now we're not only seeing African Americans being assaulted, we're seeing Caucasians, people who would consider themselves to have, you know, white privilege, now being assaulted by police force. Varun, I don't know if you necessarily agree with me on this stance, but this is my opinion. I think that it has exceeded a point of racism, and that our police officers in our nation have now become power hungry, and that it is an issue of bad training, and it is an issue of police having too much power.
Yeah, and the police need policing. You know, they need to be police, and that shouldn't be, you know, the standard. It should be the exact other way around. You know, they're here to police us, but they themselves need a person to train them on how to do the right thing. And I think that I was at LensCrafters today getting my eyes checked up, and I heard a lot of people in the store, multiple people talking about how the gun store nearby had lines of people waiting outside to receive their guns. And I think that they were talking about how people don't trust the police anymore and people need to defend themselves instead of relying on the police. That should not be the case. And yeah. That's from my personal standpoint and what I've experienced. I don't know if you've experienced anything like that, Damien, but that is not okay for the citizens to be losing their trust in the police. And that comes down to our government and how we're regulating the police.
Well, so, There's a quote, something along the lines that in order to have a civilization, you need rules, you need someone that respects those, or you need a mass amount of people that respect those rules. And finally, you need someone that enforces those rules, right? And if you don't have someone that's enforcing the rules, then you lose really what a civilization is. I might have misquoted that, but it's something along those lines. And you have to remember that if the people that are enforcing the rules are only choosing to enforce them on certain people or are over-enforcing them on other people, that then the civilization crumbles and your society crumbles. You know, you were mentioning guns, so I kind of want to change topics onto what, I don't know if you were aware of what Jake Frum was exposed to saying earlier today.
I was not.
So basically what he was saying is that only, there was some text coming out. I don't have the exact quote here, but he was saying something along the lines that only people that are white and have white privilege should have guns, and that if that were the case, that violent crimes would be down.
Who said this?
Jake Frum, former quarterback for UGA and backup quarterback for the Buffalo Bills in the NFL.
I thought I heard you wrong. Wow.
I thought I heard myself wrong when I said it.
You know what? I don't know what to think about that. I know exactly what to think about, actually. I think it is downright ignorant and just it is completely. I mean, what right does he have in saying that? And I'm being very emotional here instead of critical. Yeah, I don't understand that whatsoever.
Well, you see, I in a respect, I wouldn't say that I defended him, but I think that everyone's entitled to their opinions, and I think that that's something that's amazing about living in the United States of America. I feel kind of upset at the fact that he sent these text messages. This wasn't a public statement that he made. We have to remember that.
Oh, it wasn't. Wow, okay.
He sent these text messages to someone that he had, you know, confidence in sending these text messages to. I believe it was a female who recently decided to expose these text messages. But I feel like it is not necessarily correct to cancel him, in a sense, because he's not coming out and making a public statement about this issue. This is something that, you know, he's just voicing his opinion on to someone that he had trust in. And I feel like if you start, you know, exposing people for voicing their opinions to private people, to their friends, to their family, then you have a real issue in America. I feel like it's wrong that these text messages were leaked. I feel like what he's saying is inherently wrong and that he shouldn't be saying it. But I feel like it's also wrong that the text messages were leaked and that he's being judged for something that he said to someone in confidence, in privacy. What do you think?
You know what? I disagree, because I just looked online at the Jake Frum incident on Twitter as well, and apparently he used the term elite white people in his text messages. So I think that is inherently racism, and I think that is, you know, legally not okay in the United States by any measure, and that the person in leaking it, I don't know if you agree with me, but was justified by the fact that Jake Fromm's teammates should know about that. You know, and they're never going to see him in the same light, but they should know about that, because that is an instance of racism. And playing with that kind of person, communicating with that kind of person, you have to lay things out and make them clear before they come out in a different way.
Well, you know, I think that I'm going to disagree with you. Again, I think that you have certain things that you can say to certain people in confidence and in privacy, and if those are his underlying opinions and those are his underlying beliefs, and he only expresses that with his friends and family, then I think that he has every right to do so. Now, on the other hand, if he had come out and he had said this publicly, and he had said that he dislikes African Americans or that he doesn't like to throw to African American teammates, then that's another issue. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying here, but I feel like it's not right. If I told you something in confidence, Varun, you know, saying it man to man, just me and you having a conversation, for it to be exposed to the world when I'm just trying to, you know, get my opinion across to you, how do you respond to that?
I think you're right in a certain respect. I think the person releasing the statement did say, "My job," and this is a quote from her, "My job is to hold racists accountable despite who they are." And in a sense, she is holding them accountable, but I agree with you in the standpoint that every American has privacy and rights to privacy that we should respect as people, no matter who the person is. There's many opinions we can go on and on for hours and hours about whether what she did was right or wrong. But the bottom line here is what Jake said is not okay.
Yeah.
And we should you know, try to, you know, snip racism at the butt. But moving forward onto somebody else going out and speaking about racism and something that obviously happened on the 25th, George Floyd's death, we're talking about Candace Owens, a very right-wing person who went on Facebook and many, many social media platforms. I don't know if you saw what she said, Damian, but a lot of my friends sent me that exact video of Candace Owens speaking about her stance on the George Floyd incident. And what she said, Damian, was that George Floyd is not a martyr, because the person had drugs in his body when he was buying his cigarettes from the store in which outside of which he was killed, and because the person had a history of criminal activity dating back to 1998. Now, before I share my opinion on this, what do you think about that, Damian?
I think that it is unfair to say that he is not a good martyr when he didn't choose to die as a martyr. I don't think that it's fair to judge someone and say, you know what, you shouldn't be a martyr for this because of blah, 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 because you did this and that, when that person has never explicitly said and come out, I will die for this cause. You know, I don't think that it's fair that you say that someone doesn't deserve to be treated equally because of the fact that they're a criminal. I mean, you have to remember, underlying behind these jails, behind these prisons, they're called correctional facilities because they are meant to give, you know, to bring these people back into society, to reform the burdens of society that they have brought, and to change them to be better people. Now, I completely disagree with anyone that says that the correctional system does that. I think that it has done a horrible job of doing that, and I think that there could be better ways of doing that. But I think that it's wrong to say that he wasn't a good martyr. I think that he was... it's not necessarily that he was even a martyr. I mean, it's just...
No.
It's just... It's gotten to the point where you don't even kill serial rapists like that. You inject serial rapists with a pain reliever, and then you put them to sleep, and then at the end, you inject them with something that'll right. stop their heartbeat.
Right.
You don't right. kill right. terrorists. You don't kill terrorists like that. No human deserves to die by suffocating for 9 minutes. No one, I don't care who you are, suffocating for 9 minutes. You have serial child rapists who get more mercy at the hands of cops than what was offered to George Floyd.
It hurt to hear explained in such detail, but it's a conversation we need to be having as Americans. Are we going to focus upon who George Floyd was as a person or what his death stood for? And what his death did stand for, as Damian mentioned, is police brutality and inherent racism within the American people. And I think that what Candace Owens is doing, and no disrespect to her or anybody who believes in what she says in that video, but I think, in my opinion, what she was doing was that she was completely trying to distract the American people from what happened that day. And she was trying to say, you know, George Floyd is a bad person. He should have died anyway. Every single American person deserves the just trial by our legal system. And you and I believe in that more than anybody because we're students of the legal pathway. But I don't care who the person was. It could have been for all I care. We shouldn't look into who he was, but look into what happened that day and focus upon that and that alone. And what she said should not bear any worth to anybody listening to it. And the fact that people are using that as an argument, you know, he was a bad person, he should have died anyway, I don't care how he died, is unbelievable to me. Because what he said, and one of my friends actually said that, I don't care how he died. What he said, how he died is of utmost importance in today's nation, because that is a sign of police brutality that we need to fix and not ignore.
Yeah, well, I want to respond to, we don't usually respond to comments here on YouTube, but I think what I had just said might have been misinterpreted. Someone said that terrorists shouldn't be held in the same category as child rapists, as bad as that might sound. What I was trying to say was, I was saying that it doesn't matter if they're terrorists or if they're child rapists, they don't suffer the death that George Floyd suffered. You know, dogs don't suffer the death that George Floyd suffered. Cats don't suffer the death that George Floyd suffered. And I'm saying that it's not fair to necessarily say, well, you know, George Floyd his crime was being black. I think that that's why he died the way he died. And I think that that's the underlying issue. I was trying to say that that child rapists and terrorists are offered more mercy by our correctional system than this African American man.
Yeah, Damien, I have to agree with you on that standpoint. And I think the issue today is police brutality and gun violence in America. And a lot of people are tying what happened to gun violence, especially today. And one of the main trending hashtags on Twitter, as I'm seeing right now going live, Wear Orange is one of the main social media hashtags. And what that stands for is the people who have died by gun violence instances across the nation in the past decades in the history of the United States of America. I think it's important for us to mention that gun violence is a real issue in today's world, even past racism and even past police brutality. How do you feel about gun violence per se, Damien?
I feel like, gun violence is a, obviously, I think any violence is bad and should be frowned upon. I feel like gun violence is often an issue that is overlooked, and it's upsetting that gun violence is only spoken about when, you know, it's a school shooting or when it's, a shooting at a concert. I feel like we should have a community. We should have communication. We should have this conversation about gun violence every single day, the way that we're having this conversation about the riots that are going on CNN, on Fox News, the way that when coronavirus was the headline, that they were having the conversation of coronavirus. You know, I think that we need to move this way that the news does it. I don't care if you're Fox. I don't care if you're MSNBC, CNN. They are trying to catch the headlines. What people don't understand is that on the way to school in Chicago, in Detroit, even in places close to us, Atlanta, children are shot and children are victims of gun violence, but unfortunately they're just marked down as another statistic. And I think it goes back to systemic racism. That's a discussion that we've had, but I think it goes back down to the fact that these people are financially, these people meaning, you know, people that live in impoverished, whether you're Hispanic, black, I don't mean to use that as a negative term, but they have been oppressed by the system, including white people, including certain white people. They have been oppressed by the system. You know, they have become financially illiterate. They have become angry at the situation that they are in. They have failed to pay bills. They are becoming homeless, so they resort to gangs and drugs, selling drugs. And it's unfortunate. You know, I wanted to change the topic to this, but staying on the topic, but moving the conversation elsewhere. Someone said, I don't remember who it was. It might've been on a podcast that I was listening to earlier, but they said that it's interesting how, you know, this is what they said. Basically, it's interesting how when white people start dying, that out of nowhere, the GOP and the Democratic Party, Republicans and Democrats can come and pass a bill in agreement for $4 trillion. But when African Americans have been dying because of systemic oppression in the United States of America, that they ignore it, that they don't give them any money. What do you think, Brun?
Damien, I think that the issues that we face today are very two-sided even as we speak. And I think that there's a blurred line in politics between white people and black people that is becoming very, very, very distinct as we speak today. I think it's hard for a lot of people to wrap their minds around the idea that black people are still oppressed and that white privilege does not exist. And they think that everything is okay between the races when really, really it's not. And you know, it's always happened in politics. I think that the issues that politicians are partisan to tend to influence how they carry forth acts. For example, in the coronavirus circumstance, President Trump, he waited almost 2 months before signing a bill to mobilize factories to produce PPE for doctors and hospitals, when many, many doctors and hospitals were you know, dying and having mortalities and fatalities from the issues of not having PPE, whereas it took him 2 days 2 days, Damien, to sign a bill that mobilized all places to open up all factories that produce meats in America. I think that a lot of the issues today are very two-sided because some lobbyists and people put support towards some issues, and other issues are frowned upon because not enough support by the lobbying industry is put upon them. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Again, I guess this is on the same grounds. First of all, I want to welcome any new viewers that are joining us on the live podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to check us out on Spotify as well and on Twitter to keep up with us. But going back to what you were saying, Varun, you know, I feel like lobbyists have a lot of control. And this is a conversation that I wanted to have on the podcast, and I'm happy that I get to bring it up. But, you know, you have I'm sure that you're aware of Republicans saying that, you know, that it's not right for rioters to burn small businesses, correct?
I am.
An interesting thing was with the bill that they passed, they decided to put a cap on it was something along the lines that they decided to put a cap on the amount of financial support that small businesses could get. And because of it, 40% of small businesses said that they would be closing their doors in 6 months. So how come that gets swept under the rug? But when that same business is burned to the ground and kind of put out of their, I mean, both are wrong. Let me just start off by saying that. But that business is burnt to the ground and kind of put out of their misery early. How come that's kind of ignored? How come you can ignore the fact that the GOP closed 40% of small businesses? And I'm not saying this as a Democrat. Again, I'm centrist. There's Republicans that are complaining about this, that they said that it's wrong to burn small businesses, but yet they go and they rob these small businesses because larger lobbyists are in Washington lobbying and asking for money. So they have to ignore the small businesses and give the $4 trillion to the large corporations. And I call here on out Democrats who stayed silent on this as well. This is not this is a bipartisan calling out of both sides of the aisle. It is wrong.
Yeah. And I think the discussion we need to be having as American people is which is the lesser evil. You know, on one side, we have angry people, and not all of them are African-American. We have Caucasian people taking advantage of the circumstances, Latino people, and many people of different races as Asians as well in the mix. But they're looting small businesses in the name of Black Lives Matter and to advance a movement that has garnered national support. And then we have these politicians, as you're saying, who are looting the American people and small businesses, even in a heightened circumstance, for their reelection. Mm-hmm. Which is not standing for anything. I think that both of them are looting the American people and that we need to tackle both the issues head on instead of just saying, oh, this is okay, but what I'm doing, what they're doing is wrong, but what I'm doing is completely okay.
Well, I think that the term, you know, it's got to be white looting. I'm aware that white people are participating in the looting that is happening in the riots, and in some circumstances, it's a majority white people that are looting. But I'm referring to white looting in the sense that you have a older white man controlled GOP and an older white person controlled Democratic Party, and their looting goes unnoticed because no one's there to call them out because they're doing sophisticated looting. You know, these other people, these minorities or the people that are speaking out against the government are being called out by the government because they're not as slick with it. And I think that that's wrong. I think both should be called out. And I think that we as American people have a responsibility to do that.
You know, who's talking about it, Damien? Who's talking about how when people have been looting small businesses for decades and years, and in this presidency, this administration, especially no Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, NPR, I don't care who you're talking about, they have gone and not talked about it whatsoever.
Yeah.
But then again, when people are looting these small businesses and doing the exact same thing to a lesser extent, we're talking about it on Fox News every single day.
Yeah,
on CNN.
I'm gonna ask you this question. So is it fair to say that it's looting when these people pay their taxes that pay for the salary of the police officers, and then those police officers bail on their small businesses? Because as you know, Amazon wasn't paying taxes. So and then you have these protesters that are walking up to an Amazon facility and that they want to burn it down. This is just an example. This is hypothetical. But the police show up to defend the Amazon facility. But when your mom and pop shop that's been paying taxes for the last 60 years is about to be burnt down, the police retreat to Beverly Hills to protect the white rich, the African-American rich, the people that have power, and who most of them don't pay taxes. I mean, is it fair to say that we're paying, that these small businesses are again paying taxes, that the American people are paying taxes for Donald Trump to be protected by the Secret Service when we haven't seen his tax returns? I think that it's another form of looting, that you're not sending out these police officers to protect the people that are paying for their salaries.
You know what? I think it is strategic. I think that the right wing, and not saying everybody in the right wing, but a lot of right wing commentators and senators and politicians, they actually want more looting incidents so they can bring the attention away from the Black Lives Matter movement. Because that is a complete distractor, and it distracts people, gives them talking points against the BLM movement and against the things that we're doing to stop racism in America and to stop police brutality. I think it gives these people talking points, and that's what the right wing feeds off of a lot of these commentators. I also want to say that in my perspective, the looting is occurring from the American people and people affected by the coronavirus, especially because I wanted to kind of direct our focus a little bit towards the virus situation going on, because we've been so focused upon the race relations that we haven't really gotten to that section of the American issue. Yep. But the issue with that is that, you know, our race riot gear, the gear that, you know, riot protection officers wear is, I don't know if you know this, Damien, but 10 times more expensive than the PPE.
Yeah, the PPE.
Yeah.
It's, and you know, someone brought up the point that's like, isn't it kind of weird that these riots break out and all over America you have thousands of police officers and military personnel in this riot gear, almost as if they were waiting for it, but yet when a pandemic hits the nation, that we're on a shortage of PPE, I think that that's wrong. How do you have all this riot gear waiting around, but you don't have something waiting around for the pandemic? What do you think, Varun?
You know what happened? Damien, what happened was that in the H1N1 pandemic, we had a stockpile of resources that we used to control the epidemic a couple years ago, right?
Yeah.
And what happened was, the issue was that President Trump didn't, you know, replenish the stockpile like any sensible president would. No. President Trump let it be there and let our resources stay unfilled. And the other issue is that he's been hearing about the coronavirus ever since January, and forget even taking action and telling people to stay inside and to have masks on. He didn't even think to restore that stockpile of PPE equipment that we had.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting thing. But, you know, I want to talk about the whole mask thing and the whole wearing masks and not going out and washing your hands and shutting down businesses. I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, we thought that this pandemic was going to be something much deadlier, and you can say that part of it is because we did decide to stay inside, but I want to know why we're not, you know, I don't know if you knew this, but I heard that the statistic is that 80% of people that are in ICU have a vitamin D deficiency, you know, and a big issue with that is a lot of the people that are in ICU, they're obese. A lot of the people that have been greatly affected by this virus, you know, they're not physically active. So why don't we hear politicians coming out and saying, hey, instead of being scared out of your minds, why don't you guys walk 1 mile every day? Why don't you guys decide to take a vitamin? Why doesn't the government even supply you with vitamins? You know, you have to wonder how much of this would have been prevented if you would have had government, you know, under Obama's administration, you had a big push for I don't know if they still have it necessarily with Obama's administration, so I'm sorry if I'm getting this a little bit tangled up, but he had a big push for physical activity. You had First Lady Michelle Obama, who was coming out and saying that schools, and you have to wonder if everyone lived by those policies, if everyone lived by those ideals, and if more politicians on both sides of the aisle, again, this is an unpartisan calling out on people of both sides of the aisle, Republican and Democrat. What if instead of fear-mongering, they had come out and said, hey, we have this unknown virus that's going to attack us, and we know from previous viruses and from common sense that if you're physically active and that if you're healthy, that you have a greater chance of beating any virus that comes your way. Why didn't we see that, Varun?
You know what? I think the issue here, I disagree with you a little bit, is partisan. Because we saw in the Obama administration, the first lady, one of the most active first ladies we've had in the past century, came out and did so much to increase the amount of healthy food and vegetables that we had in our schools. And the first thing that Trump does this year, on January 17th, 2020, I don't know what date it was. It was in January of one of the years. But what he did was he rolled back school lunch rules.
Yeah, I think that was last year.
And cut down the amount of vegetables that people needed to provide. And I think, you know why he did that, Damien? The reason why is because potato lobbies came out and they put money into his reelection campaign so that he comes out and does this. And the lobbying industry once again triumphs over the American people and what the American people need to survive.
Well, I didn't think about it from that perspective. I don't know if that's necessarily true, so I'm going to have to disagree with you on that point, and I'm just going to have to say it with the obvious. He didn't like what the African-American predecessor, both first African-American president, who was his predecessor, and first African-American female, you know, first lady of the United States, sorry. I think that he was just kind of trying to throw away what they did, throw away their legacy. I don't know necessarily, is there proof that it was these potato lobbyists, Rune? Rune?
Yeah.
Well, was there proof that it was the potato lobbyist?
You cut out a little bit for me. I'm gonna say that I've been looking this up for the past couple of days, and the potato lobby, there is proof.
Okay.
I think that
okay.
the USDA
wow.
director said that the potato lobby has been pushing for that for the USDA for so long, and that's
wow.
one of the main reasons Trump did that.
Wow, yeah, I wasn't aware of that. So I thought that it was kind of the obvious that he just wanted to kind of undo the Obama legacy, both Michelle and Barack. But I guess there was an underlying, you know, political gain to it beyond just undoing the Obama legacy. So, I mean,
there always is.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it. I didn't know that it really had to do with the potato lobbyists. But again, the question remains, why don't we see politicians, instead of creating this fear, they kind of advocate for people to be healthier in America? You know, it goes back to kind of what we were saying on the last episode of the podcast, where we were talking about obesity for a short period of time. And we were saying that it's kind of wrong to tell people that being obese is necessarily healthy, or that being obese is necessarily okay. I think that you shouldn't assault someone verbally or physically for how they look or how much they weigh. But I think that you should also incentivize people or kind of dissuade them from making unhealthy choices. And I haven't seen a lot of politicians necessarily come out and do that, besides, you know, obviously Michelle Obama.
You know what? I think that politicians, I agree. I think they're saying, you know, it's controversial. And I don't want to stick my foot into that because I might get into some deep mud. But it is an issue that needs to be addressed, and it has needed to be addressed for years and decades, because obesity, as I said two podcasts ago, is a disease.
Yeah.
You know, it is not a mental thing. It is a physical disease.
It can
disease.
Be a mental thing. It can be a mental thing.
It can be. You're right. Sorry, I actually wanted to step back there. It can be a mental thing. I completely disagree. I mean, not disagree, but I apologize if I went against anybody on that, and if I upset any of our viewers. But the issue is that obesity is a disease that needs to be addressed in America.
Yeah.
In America, because, you know, it can be obviously spread by mental illnesses or pre-existing conditions, but obesity in and of itself should not be flaunted.
Yes, 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 yes. I agree with you. And so now it goes back to the question of, on both sides of the aisle, could it be the fact that maybe this wasn't addressed? Could the fact that this wasn't addressed be accredited to lobbyists? I don't know if McDonald's lobbies, but I'm assuming that there you have different fast food chains or different chains such as the potato industry lobbying. So you have to wonder, could it be that these people are getting mass amounts of money on both sides of the aisle to keep their mouths shut and the American people's mouths stuffed?
Yeah, Damien, I do think so. I think lobbies are behind a lot of things in America, partly or majoritarily, and especially the climate change movement. A lot of the lobbies of the oil industry and things like that have been behind a lot of the actions. I wanted to talk about the Bush administration a couple of years ago made a big radical move by coining the term climate change to change the focus, and I was reading about this 2 days ago in a book I was reading about climate change, to make the term global warming seem less pressing and less of an issue for Americans. And that's why we have the term climate change, because the climate lobby, the oil lobby and the fossil fuel lobby had things to gain.
Yeah, well, you had be. I don't know if you're aware of this. I'm sure you are. You're huge on climate change. You guys, if Varun updates you guys on anything, you guys should go definitely check out anything that he's doing with climate change. He's a big activist for it. But you know, you had BP come out with their study, and they're the reason that this whole climate change movement kind of came out, because at the beginning they were denying climate change, but then you had BP, if I'm not mistaken, come out and get their scientists to say that yes, you know, oil does contribute. The burning of oil. The burning of fossil fuels does contribute to climate change. And then you had them actively lobby in order to get, you know, changes made and yeah, make the environment healthier.
I was about to say that. BP has released a statement about that. And I think that what happened after that statement, Damien, was that BP, instead of sticking with their overall fossil fuels and things like that, has begun the shift towards a renewable ecosystem for its workers and for the people that are its consumers. And it's in response, first of all, to the climate change epidemic, and also, second of all, to the kind of fall of the coal industry and the displacement of those industries of fossil fuels. We saw President Trump come out and talk about the dying coal industry and how he plans to revive that industry. But I think it's not reviving that industry. I think it is opening up new horizons to renewable ecosystems, because the future that we have, Damien, is not in the fossil fuel industry.
Yeah, it is
in fact in the wind industry, in the solar power industry, in the nuclear fusion industry, and those kinds of industries.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like coming back and saying that, I don't know, the blood drawing industry, you know, before barbers, they would draw your blood in order to relieve you of any sicknesses. If he was going to bring that back, it's like we've advanced beyond that. So making a promise to go back to that, it's just not realistic. It's not possible, because we've evolved as a society beyond that. So I think that we should, instead of denying the fact that we can do better and going back and trying to revive the coal industry, I think that we should take initiative and do something now before it's too late. Now, I want to ask you this. So my take on climate change has always been, I haven't necessarily ever looked into it. So I know that there's people that deny it. I don't deny it. I believe that it's real. But my take has always been, when I'm pressed about it, it's been, you know, why not just do something just in case? How do you feel about that? Like, my thought is, it can be real, so why not do something just in case it is? Why just flat out ignore it?
I think, Damien, to be completely honest with you, people are not ignoring it as much as they did before, but they're simply saying, you know, it's past my lifetime, and it's my kids and my grandkids who are going to have to deal with it. And because of that, we shouldn't stop the way we live, or the way we buy, or the way we produce energy for a thing that's 10 years in the making.
Yeah, okay.
But the fact of the matter is, Damien, if we don't act on it right now, we're going to have to deal with the consequences at another level. And I don't think we'll be able to solve it if we don't work on it right now, which there is a solution right in front of us. Mm-hmm. And if you do see, we're looking at, my mom was talking about this yesterday, scientists who and people from NASA who have been looking at the Earth from satellite images in space, because of the whole coronavirus pandemic and how people have stopped going on flights and stopped driving cars as much and stopped using facilities as much, the skies have been clearer.
Yeah.
And it's more clear the skies have been in decades, as per NASA.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting, and it's something that's very nice to see. And again, it just goes back to why not just, you know, go with it, if you get what I'm saying. Like, I understand, like, why not just take the initiative to, instead of, you know, coal, it's not just bad because it causes global warming, but eventually you're going to run out of coal, you're going to run out of it. So why not just take the step forward now and kind of kill two birds with one stone, even if you don't believe in necessarily that, you know, one of the birds is out there flying. Just, you know, kind of be safe, just in case. Do you get what I'm saying?
I do. And people call AOC a radical. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez a radical for calling for a Green New Deal and things like that. But the Green New Deal, Damien, is going to create so millions of jobs for the American people and those displaced coal workers, which is going to increase the economy and help the world so much. And America, as a world leader, needs a Green New Deal more than any nation in the world. And us stepping out of the Paris Climate Agreement under President Trump has increased the amount of you know, non-support the world has had for climate change efforts to kind of decrease this epidemic. But I think I'm very strongly involved in this topic. And I think that the next president, whoever it is, has a moral and physical responsibility to address the issue. Because with the coronavirus, Damien, we have, in the span of a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. we have shut the entire nation down and worked to stop it. But when we have an issue that affects our children and our grandchildren, we refuse to act on it. What does that say about us as people?
No, I have to agree with you. So I wanna talk a little bit about Donald Trump leaving the World Health Organization. But before that, I kind of want to play a little bit of the devil's advocate here. So obviously, you mentioned the Green New Deal. I personally am not that involved in climate change again, so I wouldn't. I wouldn't voice my opinion on it, but playing the devil's advocate here, are we just going to leave those people who relied on the coal industry beforehand, are we just going to leave them stranded? Are we just going to ignore them? Are we going to let them become ghost towns? What are we going to do about them?
You know what, Damien? I read through the entire Green New Deal, and a bunch of right-wing politicians obviously increased and focused upon by lobbies to do things that are very appalling. I'm not going to go into that in depth right now, but what they've been saying is that the Green New Deal is calling for these people to be displaced and not to be put into work as soon as the deal gets laid up. But Damien, the Green New Deal is literally, I think, like 20 pages of just paperwork of suggestions for the nation that is bound to be filled by the next politicians in command.
Yeah.
So it's really a framework that we can use and we can morph as we need to by talking to big oil corporations like BP. Like GE and things like that, big corporations that depend on the fossil fuel industry. And with them, I think if they give their support like BP has, we can come up with a coalition towards it. And I think the issue, Damien, and what we need to start with is by using these companies and encouraging corporate responsibility. Because if BP transfers their workers to the renewable sectors mm-hmm. instead of the fossil fuel sectors, we're going to have so much more better communication on that stance.
Yeah, I think that this is a topic to be had. I definitely like to have this conversation with someone that kind of views it from the other point of view and kind of talk to them and ask them like why they would go against the Green New Deal. So I'll look into it. I think that this is a great conversation to have for the next podcast. But now, what do you think about Donald Trump leaving the World Health Organization? I mean, I don't want to bash on President Trump too hard. Again, as a centrist, I don't want to bash on his policies. I don't want to bash on his politics. I bashed on him very hard on our first Politine podcast episode because of the fact that it had gone beyond politics. I think that it had gone into a moral standpoint. So that's the reason that you guys saw me go so hard. But I've always had an open mind when it comes to Donald Trump. I've always had an open mind when it comes to his policies, to his politics. That is being said, since he became our president. I think that we should have given him the chance. I think that unfortunately we did give him the chance, and now I as a centrist, as someone that's moderate, as someone that is open to viewing different points of view, I think that now my feet are cemented kind of in the anti-Trump party. So I want to ask your opinion on it before I give mine. What do you think about Trump leaving the World Health Organization?
Glad to hear you mention that, Damien. I think that the issue with him leaving the World Health Organization is that He is putting the blame upon somebody else instead of taking the blame himself, which is a human flaw that we need to address.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. I think that you've talked about it a lot. Politicians kind of trying to get away from the main topic, especially as it correlates to the riots that are happening. I think that he's kind of doing this kind of as a little bit of a childish move where he's trying to put the blame on the World Health Organization, which I think it's completely immature and irresponsible. I think you saw Nancy Pelosi or someone else tweet that we will be back on January 21st, 2021, which is when the next president, according to them, according to Democrats, Joe Biden would be in office, presumptuously.
Right. It's a bold statement. And I think that there's a lot of support for Joe Biden on both sides because people are not necessarily supporting Joe Biden but are done with Donald Trump and his presidency. Uh-huh. Republicans for ethics, Republicans for Biden, and a lot of these organizations have gone out and shown their support for Biden, including the Lincoln Project. But With him leaving the WHO, I think very close to that move, he also signed an executive order against China.
Yeah.
And I think I'm not going to go into depth about that order itself, but I think that one of the part of the reason for why he did these orders, Damien, was that he wanted to shift the attention away from the race riots and into something else. And we've seen Trump do it over and over and over again. He's been trying to shift the narrative towards something else constantly, but the race riots aren't going to be stopped by something else.
Yeah.
And that's the difference he's not recognizing.
Well, someone was having a conversation earlier today. I think it was on the Joe Rogan podcast, if I'm not mistaken, where they were talking about how do you control the riot portion of the protests. And they were saying that Joe Rogan was saying that that basically you have to have the military come in and control these people in order for the peaceful protesters to go in. And I think that he was arguing with a Democrat and a Republican, or he was discussing with a Democrat and a Republican, and the Democrat was having a very hard time getting her point across. But I think that I kind of want to vocalize her point. I think that the way that you control these riots and you get the looting to stop is by having the police come out and create a sense of unity, because when you create that sense of unity, you see protesters begin to turn in the people that are starting these places on fire, that are smashing the windows, because they feel inclined to help the police out in order so they can ascertain their or so that they can maintain their protest as a peaceful one. But it's another thing when you have the president coming out and dividing the nation again, as General Mattis said. It's an interesting situation. I don't think that military force is the way to go with it. I think that the opposite is the way to go with it. I think that military coming in and, you know, talking to the people, telling them, we understand how you feel, we're going to march with you. If you guys see anything going on that is illegal, let us know. We're here for you. We don't want to hurt anyone.
Yeah, I agree. Damien, I'm trying to find a quote here from President Trump, but before I'm talking about that, I wanted to mention that we have seen, I'm glad that you mentioned protesters turning in people to the police.
Yes.
We have seen protesters turning in people to the police in many instances across our nation. And I think that, you know, the issue with the military coming in and resolving that crisis itself is that, you know, the military is not resolving the crisis, but what it's doing is putting innocent people, peaceful protesters, at risk. We have seen riot people from Buffalo pushing a 72-year-old man to the ground for returning a helmet. We have seen, I don't know if you saw this, I reposted it on our Twitter earlier today, but there was a group of police officers in a kind of a biker gang, and they were, it was hard to watch. I had to turn my eyes away a little bit, and it was very saddening. But they were hitting their baton on peaceful protesters who were simply, you know, sitting there and protesting.
Yeah.
And what are we doing? I mean, you're saying send the military in, but what kind of people are we sending in?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it creates a problem when you're sending in the military in, and you're, again, I talked about this on the last episode of the podcast, and I don't want to be redundant here, but you're calling for an extreme show of force when an extreme show of force was the cause of these riots. An overuse of force was the cause of these riots. So the way that you can solve this is showing, hey, or going out and saying, maybe even as the president, as the leader of the nation, going out and saying, we understand your grievances. This is something that's going to take time to change. You know, we understand the pain that you're going through. We're not coming out here to stop you from sending your message. As a matter of fact, we're coming out here and trying to spread the message with you because we believe that racism shouldn't belong in 2020. We believe that police brutality has no place in 2020 and has no place in our nation, but we just want to make sure that you guys aren't breaking any laws and that you guys aren't disrupting any private businesses or people that weren't involved. If you guys want to be mad at us, go ahead and be mad at us, but I can assure you as the president that we're taking the proper steps to introduce legislation that is going to resolve hopefully some of the grievances that you have. But no, on the contrary, you have the president come out and call for, you know, what's the word that he said? To,
you know what he did?
It's like own the streets. I think that's what he said.
Yeah. He said that, and on May 30th, I wanted to bring this in so bad when I saw it yesterday on my Twitter feed. President Trump, in one of his tweets on Twitter, he said, they let the protesters, and I'm quoting this directly, scream and rant as much as they wanted. And protesters, Damien, was in quotations. Mm-hmm. So Trump is not respecting these protesters per se in this tweet, and obviously in his Rose Garden speech, which was not written by him. It was written by one of his White House, you know, correspondents of people writing his speech writers. But this was written exactly from Donald Trump, from his heart. And he said these quote-unquote protesters were screaming and ranting. Yeah. Why are they ranting, President Trump? Why are they ranting? Are you going to address that?
Yeah, I don't know. Has the president come out and called for any sort of unity or addressed the issue at hand? I personally haven't seen anything. I don't know if he has. I'm not saying that he hasn't. But it'd be interesting because I want to bring this up. You know, obviously anyone can write a good speech, especially when it's your job. You had people for Obama write good speeches. But it's something interesting when a speech is being written and you're presenting it, as opposed to you being on Twitter. And a lot of the times you kind of see Donald Trump saying the opposite of what he said in a speech that was written for him and kind of backtracking. And maybe in a later date and time, give a press conference where it's not on speech, it's not scripted, rather. He goes back and goes against what he said in his speech, or you have him tweet a couple hours later and completely go against what he was saying in his speech. It's weird that you kind of have the president now addressing the nation in 240 characters, and I think that is unpresidential, to be quite honest.
I agree, and what's also unpresidential is that the president is going off speech multiple times, and his speechwriters have been completely unsupportive of that going off speech for him, because it's simply not getting the job done and not calling for unity. And I wanted to end today's podcast, it's 11:46, but from my side, I wanted to say one thing. The president has not called for peace, unity, justice, and equality. And what the president has done is the president has said the only good Democrat, and I repeat this as a direct quote, is a dead Democrat. Yeah. And that, my friends and all of our listeners, is the exact opposite of calling for unity.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. And you have statements like that coming out of the leader of this nation. And then you wonder why we had to title this episode of the podcast the way we did. Pure hatred, racist acts close to home. You don't have someone saying that these racist acts shouldn't happen. On the contrary, you have someone saying, calling for a disruption of peaceful protests and calling for a disruption of American citizens on the grounds of race. And that's why you have these acts that are happening, unfortunately, within our community.
It is sickening. And that said, we're going to wrap up today's podcast by telling you guys again to contact and connect with us via Twitter. We are on Twitter at Polititeen Show. And, you know, we go live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for 1 hour on our podcast. And hopefully we'll have some interesting talking points to talk about next Monday. And we'll be back with you next Monday to talk about some of the biggest issues and how social media has influenced these issues. If you would like to connect with us, obviously Twitter is one avenue. You can also email us at polititeenpodcast@gmail.com if you have any person that you would like to appear on our show or any topics that you'd like to appear on our show. Stay tuned to our Twitter. We'll release more information and retweets about things. And that said, rest in peace, Breonna Taylor. Yes. Coming from the Polititeen podcast. And make sure to sign our petition.
Yeah, sign our petition. Could you give the link one more time for the petition, Bruin?
I will. It is change.org/justiceinfoco.
We'll be sure to tweet that out again. Or we have it tweeted out currently. If you guys want to go, again, check out the Twitter at Polititeen Show. With that being said, we want to bring a wrap to this podcast. It was a difficult conversation to have as it hit close.
Thank you all for listening to today's segment of Polititeen. We appreciate the overwhelming support that we've received over the past couple of weeks. It truly means the world. Damien and I would like to encourage any and all of our viewers to follow us on Twitter at Polititeen Show. And once again, rest in peace to Breonna Taylor. We will begin our next segment of Polititeen Podcasts next Monday and bring on some hosts and some special guests next week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Once again, thank you so much for attending and happy Friday.